Thinking Basketball Podcast. My name is Ben. Welcome back. And yes, it is that time of year. It is the Sub All-Star, the fourth annual now, Cody. Sub All-Star. Cody Hodak is here to help me. I mean, I would say help me navigate this, but I think after last week, I mean, you're just going to pick me up after I careen off the walls constantly. How you doing?
I think that's almost better, actually. I'm honored to be able to pick up the pieces and see what the damage is afterwards. The damage is what I live for.
This is probably my favorite episode to do every year. The spirit of the show, if you're unfamiliar with it, is that after the 25 or so players that are selected to the All-Star team, there is this next group of really, really, really good basketball players that never gets acknowledged. There's nothing next to their name. I would even say that the inspiration for this show, this idea, was someone like Lamar Odom, who plays his entire career. He's always really good, but never quite good enough to be an All-Star. A couple years ago, someone suggested we call this episode the Almost Stars. That felt a little too negative for me, right? But it's the idea that there are guys that still move the needle, just not significantly like an All-Star would. And can we talk about them and acknowledge them and, you know, in this sense, give them the accolade of sub-All-Star, the official sub-All-Star team? This is the fourth one we've done. And it gets really, really hard. There's a couple guys that we'll talk about that are kind of closer to being all-stars, and I think those players are much easier to discuss. But the difference between the, I don't know, the 38th or 42nd best player in the NBA and the 62nd best player in the NBA is probably about the same size between like the second best player and the 10th best player. It's just much harder to discern talent at that point. So Cody, after last week's show where we tried to talk about the incredible depth of point guards in the NBA and people just became obsessed with the quote-unquote rankings, I don't know what's going to happen.
No, this is going to be really interesting, especially just because it's such a wide swath of players. Like, when I was even trying to pretend to prepare for this, like, I kind of like threw together some kind of a metric where I'm like, all right, spit out 100 players, and then just going through those 100 players, just being like, all right, I feel like this player is interesting, this player is interesting. What's your method for setting this whole system up?
Honestly, I kind of try to keep track in my head as the season goes on, players that kind of get my attention or players that I think are contributing to winning in some way but might not be all-stars. And then I, to your point, I cast a wider net when I actually go through and make the episode and try to pick a quote-unquote team. We always try to get out to about 50 players. The top 50-ish is the spirit. I think if I did this 10 or 15 years ago, it would have been the top 40 or 45. But there's just so many good players now in the league. And so I think today my team gets us to 50. I didn't count. I know in years past I've cheated and gone to 51 or 53 or something like that. But you've got the block of guys that I consider all-star caliber players, and then the guys after that, and the net that I cast, I will look at basically every major one-number impact metric just to see, you know, okay, here's like a filtration system. Who catches the top 65, 75, 85 names? And then I will manually go through and make sure I also aren't missing anyone that is on my radar because they're having a down year or there's just some fluke variance going on in their plus minus or something like that. And I went back and was looking at my notes last year. Very similar. I always end up with about 80 guys. So you're almost looking at, what does that come out to? 40 players for these 20 or 25 spots, something like that. I botched that math. 55 players, let me say that again, for these 25 spots.
So obviously the way that you think about all-star player isn't necessarily like this player made the all-star team.
Yep.
So do you want to talk, like, definitionally, like, what do you think an all-star is? And then, like, connected to that, what do you think a sub-all-star is?
Well, on one hand, you could call it arbitrary because I'm just trying to say, I think a guy who moves the needle this amount on a, you know, reasonably constructed team, sort of the way I think about players adding value, where do we draw the line and call that an all-star? I have a spot that I've kind of used historically that I think, that's about what an all-star comes out to, because historically that would probably make you like a top 25-ish player. And then to the same point, where do you draw the line when you say sub-all-stars? Again, for me, I have an actual kind of number. I use a championship over replacement player estimator that calculates this, and I kind of have a number that I draw. But then when I make the team, it's still the last couple spots are, am I going to go over 50? Am I just going to stick to a strict top 50? Does one of these guys feel like he's more in the spirit? This is sort of like, I think I've had him on the team before, like the Danny Green version. Like, what? Where else are we going to acknowledge Danny Green, even though he's almost kind of like just a really strong role player? So it's hard to get him in this category. So it's still an arbitrary line, but the spirit of it is trying to get like a top 50.
I think, and not to like dwell on Danny Green for too long, even though like we could talk the entire episode about Danny Green, that would be cool. But I feel like players like him, they don't necessarily have like the total impact of a quote-unquote better player, but the fact that like his skills are just amplified when he's next to other teams,
that's
it, adds a little bit to his value.
Yeah, and I think as the years go on, not just sub all-star exercises, but making more videos, getting deeper in scouting, we get better and better numbers. We're now like, what, in year 9 of the optical tracking data from Second Spectrum. I think as things progress, I index a little bit more on like, if I'm in a high-level playoff environment and I need someone not to be picked on, not to be a weakness, to be able to adapt to the game, to be able to adapt to the intensity of the game, the way the game is officiated, higher-level X's and O's. Just it's a little bit like scaling up your competition, right? I think those are some of the tiebreakers for me. So some of the guys we'll talk about today that were on the cut line that I probably left off, you know, I'm like, I don't know which direction to go in. I think I'm indexing on that kind of analysis more, that kind of attribute as a player, the more time that goes on, because I think this in a way is almost like just generalized basketball goodness, if that makes sense. You know, we talked about Kyle Lowry last week. It's like, yeah, you can focus on his scoring game or his pick and roll game or his passing. When he was at his peak, some of those things are better than others. Some of them are really good. But when you watch the game, it's like, oh, it doesn't matter what the opponent is. It doesn't matter what the coverage is. It doesn't matter what the system is. It doesn't matter what the circumstance is. He's a dude who just constantly makes good plays. Manu Ginobili is another great example of this in my mind, where it's like you always play on a really good team and you always play in that high-level playoff environment year in and year out. So the fact that some of your stats are a little lower than everyone else's, or it's hard to say, yeah, this guy has, you know, one super dominant skill. I think there are players that we'll get to that are more specialists, but I'm just at this point realizing like when the rubber hits the road, I want to make sure you're really, really good. And I think that also applies to young players more. Young players have more fat to trim. And so a sexy young player comes along and his scoring numbers jump and his shooting percentages jump. And I'm trying to be a little more cautious about buying into that because of all these other things.
So when you're indexing for a younger player, maybe a player that doesn't necessarily have playoff experience, how are you sort of looking for those kinds of little things that they're doing on the court? Is it just like a random game in January and it's like, oh, so-and-so is making this kind of rotation that looked really good, or so-and-so is really able to take any sort of offense that's being thrown at him defensively? What do you look for?
Yeah, it's a little bit of that. I think there are probably some statistical signals you could filter for here and there. But throughout the season, what I'm doing is seeing someone have success, say, against a weak defense or a defense that struggles handling a particular action. You know, I was watching a Celtics game preparing for this, and they were playing Miami, but Miami was injured the other day, right? And so you get two plays in a row where they run pick and roll, and you get an easy kick out because the weak side defender makes a poor decision in his zone up responsibilities. And then you get an easy lay down because someone doesn't sink. They don't make that help the helper rotation. And it's like, yeah, okay. What's going to happen is they're going to swap those guys off the court for Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry and PJ Tucker. And that's just not going to be there at all. So what happens when you get into the paint on that second dribble and the defense collapses, and are you making the same kickout pass? Because it's going to be a turnover. So I'm trying to look at sort of, I watch a team or a guy in one environment, I immediately want to go see how they play against the best defense in the league, the best rim protector in the league. Another one, speaking of Miami, is actually watching guys when I scout them and then immediately watching a Miami or Golden State game against that team because they demand so much more from movement off the ball. So that's sort of how I approach it in the regular season. And of course, you don't always truly know until you get to the playoffs. But I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, and I think there's way more predictors from these kind of regular season matchups than some people will say, like, you can't. How do you know if Kevin Garnett's going to be good in the playoffs? They never advance. And it's like, to me, that was always ridiculous because you can just watch him play the Spurs. The Spurs are the championship team. Just watch him play that team. He plays them really well. It's not going to be a problem when he plays the Pistons.
So it's not necessarily that they have to make a deep playoff run. As long as they're playing the right sorts of competition, like, that competition's going to be strong regardless.
I think that can happen. Yeah, I mean, sometimes you get teams that play down to their opponents and you just want to be aware of that. But I do think going back all the way to regular season matchups, sometimes, you know, in December, players get up for a big national TV game and, you know, like Memphis goes into Brooklyn and it's a big national TV game and they just absolutely destroy them. You're like, oh, okay. Yeah. These guys are good. Yeah, they're good.
So based on all that, are you going to list like the all-star players
I'm
first?
Stalling.
Or are you gonna say all 80 players?
No, I'm just stalling. That's all that's happening. Yeah, no. We should be knee deep in players right now and angry tweets, but I'm just stalling. Here's the way I like to do this. I like to talk about the bigs, the wings, and the smalls. Again, arbitrary way to just chop up players. Players and positions are so much more fluid and complex these days. But just for simplification, bigs, wings, and smalls. I will rattle off who I consider all-star quality players at that position, and then we can get into the guys I have on the sub all-star team. And I think for each category or position, we'll talk about a few of the toughest cuts. Obviously, Cody, as you know, we can get stuck going for hours trying to get through this many players. So in the interest of time, unless you have any objections or questions, what I typically do is kind of blow through each group of all-stars at a position and then start getting to the sub all-stars. And if we have time, anything else.
Go for it.
Okay. Whew. All right. With that said, where should we start? What you name the position, smalls, wings, or bigs? Where would you like to start?
Let's reverse that. Let's start with bigs.
Okay. Let's start. I feel like we're playing we're on the Game Show Network or something. Let's start with bigs. So here are my all-stars. And again, to your point, this isn't just about who I would put on the all-star team this season. As fun as it sounds to narrow down a 24-man ballot and then have everyone complain about the snubs, this is just, to me, guys that I think are playing at an all-star caliber level, and it's often slightly more than the number of spots on a team. So Anthony Davis, Bam Adebayo, Draymond Green, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Joel Embiid, Nikola Jokic, Rudy Gobert, Karl Anthony Towns, did I say him yet? And Jared Allen.
Yeah.
Anything sound crazy? Any questions? Anyone to comment on?
I was listening very carefully to see if you were going to say Jared Allen, and you waited for the end there, so I feel good that he made your cut.
I did. I got a little confused because I had him way up top, and I wanted to save his name for the end, so I had to make sure I got through him in the right order.
That was good. You built up the tension with me. I'm like, oh no, am I going to have to start a fight right away? But nope, you got Jared Allen.
He's good. Look. If you can see what Rudy Gobert does, this is the same type of player. I think you can argue. Now, they're a little different offensively. I think Gobert's got a little bit better short roll passing, and you can get into offensive rebounding and things like that. But, man, Allen plays that role really, really well as a finisher, lob threat, doesn't take stuff off the table. He just knows what he's there to do on offense. And then on defense, this is a really good defensive drop big man. Really good. So
he's a monster. And we've talked about how he kind of has this offensive synergy with Darius Garland, too. Yeah. So definitely deserves it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's get to the sub all-stars. Where we say we are? The bigs? Yeah, we're talking about bigs, Ben. Try to keep up. Okay. You'll see why I'm throwing myself here, because my first big... wait a second. No. I have one more all-star in the big category. I'm upgrading this player to a big. I was going to say Pascal Siakam. I think he's playing like an all-star now.
Yeah, I have him. I tiered it in like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I was in 2 right now, which basically meant I could see him being an all-star, but I need to look into it further. So why do you think Siakam is solidly in the in the All-Star category?
Well, I think let's just start with defense again. Relative to a lot of players, he's still a really good defender, and he's a really versatile defender, and he's playing like five in a lot of these lineups for Toronto. He's still able to protect the rim, move, rotate, switch, things like that. So it goes back to when he emerged in the championship season with Kawhi Leonard in 2019. I think you're talking about a guy who, as a baseline, is a really, really nice, positive, strong defender. And then on the offensive side, his playmaking has continued to evolve in the last couple seasons. And that's really important because, as I've mentioned before, I think we've talked about, he's not someone that you can just give the keys to the car and say like, hey, we're going to run a championship level offense through Pascal Siakam. But his ISO scoring has gotten better. His decision making has gotten better. The 3-point shot has come along a little bit, but what he's not doing anymore that I see is spamming 11 threes a game because he's feeling lucky. He's running the set. Like, Toronto will clear out the floor for him and he'll take that opportunity to attack. And then if he's got the mismatch, get into a high percentage shot. If the defense helps, he makes a pretty solid decision, especially with shooters on the kick out. And so you can actually just use him as a secondary creator that way and then fall back on his ISO scoring late in possessions or when you have certain lineups that are, you know, they have no depth in Toronto. So it's like he's literally playing backup point guard when Van Vliet is out of the game. And then he's playing center in certain lineups on the defensive side. I just think the total package is still an all-star caliber player.
I agree. And I think it shows in like Toronto's recent run. They've seemed to be playing a little bit better now. But I feel like their ecosystem, their offensive ecosystem, works really well to promote everyone's skills. Like, no one's going to be the kind of guy that you just give the rock and be like, go make a lot of stuff happen. But like, they can all help each other make some other stuff happen.
Okay, so this next guy I know you're going to want to talk about. Now we're starting the sub all-stars in this big man category. And the first name for me was Evan Mobley.
Oh, Evan Mobley. I had a comparison question I was going to ask. I'm going to save that right now. But, the thing about Evan Mobley defensively, like, I can definitely see him making it just on his defense right now. But I think if I were to have a question at the moment, it's on offense. So what do you think about his offense and how does it fit into his sub all-star candidacy?
No, I think that's a great point. This goes back to what I was saying about young players. His offense obviously has potential to get better and better. And he's so young and, you know, he's shown that he can shoot a little bit from the mid range. He can shoot a little bit from downtown. He loves maybe a little too much the hop step when he gets into his drive. And, you know, he's still young, so he doesn't have incredible base and lower body strength. But And then his passing. I mean, you could see how he could be a short roll passer, a great high-low passer, interior passer. All these things are there. But my assumption right now is if you put him under a pressure cooker, and I think we might see this, hopefully we get to see this in a great Cleveland Cavalier playoff series in about 2 months, that offense won't be consistently reliable yet. But the defense, I think, is at a level where, like, even though he's a rookie, Cody, don't we have to talk about him as an all defensive caliber player? In like, he's really good as a big man.
We absolutely defending about eight shots a game within 6 feet, and he's making opponents shoot 14 percentage points worse when he's defending around the rim. Like, those are god level numbers. Like, that percentage shift is better than the guys like Rudy Gobert this year. He's, I think, in like the top five in that percentage shift of all players that are like defending 5 shots a game from that range, and that is not normal for a rookie. So he's come in like basically fully formed as a rim protector.
Yeah, exactly. The sky is the limit going forward in terms of how good he can be on defense. But I guess the takeaway for me is right now, and we'll see this with a couple other players, right now when you are at this level defensively, even though I think you're still a negative on offense, that puts you in this caliber of player. That puts you in this band of player. You know, you go on a really good, like, Cleveland's been a really good team this year. And you join a team like that, he could be the full-time center, I think. And instead, he's playing in this triple towers where, especially when Lauri Markkanen's out there, they got Mobley chasing wings, and it doesn't matter. He still does that well. So, yeah, the whole package is good enough to get into this tier for me. Anything else you want to say on him before we move on?
I was just saying, I think on offense, the main thing that I would like to see less from him is post-ups. I feel like he posts up a little too much for how inefficient he is at those shots. I like to see players like that, if you're not great offensively yet, maybe do a little bit more offensive stuff. I think he's a good cutter and lurker. He just kind of hangs around the basket and cuts at good times and finishes well. But I don't know what the end game is with posting him up so much, and I would like to see some of that cut out a bit more.
Yeah, I think on that front, I do get nervous about some of these super young players being on the team. I've gone back and looked in the past and, you know, do you prematurely put someone in this category because of this? And it goes back to what I said at the top. I'm just looking for that, like, all around, you know how to play basketball, you have skills. If you're a nuclear weapon like Zion Williamson and you're a specialist at something, that's a little different because you can break the game in that category. But otherwise, yeah, I think going forward, kind of trimming the fat is the name of the game for Mobley, but he's already so good. Another guy who we've discussed, and I just did a video on him, so I won't belabor the point. I think Jaren Jackson Jr. is in this category. Same kind of thing. I think his defense is basically really good right now, and his offense is interesting. It's still a negative for me, but it's added enough that I think, again, when you put the two together, you got a sub all-star player.
Yeah, again, this is another guy whose rim protection numbers are pretty incredible. He's not defending as many shots at the rim as Mobley, but he's actually... I just said that there's like five players that are making opponents shoot like 14 percentage points worse.
And Jaren's one of them?
Jaren's one of them. He's actually better. He's about 14 and a half points. And beyond that, something he does that Mobley doesn't is he's out disrupting a few more plays. Like he's racked up a few more steals and deflections. And I think when you're kind of looking at all this calculus for defense, it's interesting to try and boil it down and be like, which one of these two defenders is more impactful? And I honestly don't know the answer to that, so I'm going to kick that one back to you right now. If you had to rank them defensively for their impact, who would you take right now, Mobley or Jaren?
I think Jaren, but not by too much. Yeah, I think they're all kind of in the same band, if you will. But I would lean Jaren right now, especially with the way he's played in the last month. And then, of course, you know, another challenge with rookies is they tend to hit a little bit of a rookie wall at some point. The flip side is some rookies can really come on in the second half of the season. But it's a lot to play on a high-level team all year and then sort of, you know, carry over that momentum after only playing, what do you play, like 30, 35 games in college. So another defensive guy for me, I think last year I had him just as one of my final cuts and I wasn't sure what to do. And now I'm feeling a lot more comfortable after last season's finals run with DeAndre Ayton as a sub all-star caliber player. How do you feel about that?
Ayton's really interesting because the Suns are on like an 8-0 winning streak right now without DeAndre Ayton. Like it almost feels like, yeah.
What's new? Phoenix has had an 8-game win streak all year.
It doesn't matter. We could throw me out there as the center and Chris Paul would make me like a pick and roll god. So, I mean, Ayton's great. He's awesome. I do think his defense is actually even better in the playoffs. So I think he's the kind of player that after seeing him in the playoffs, I think I judge his regular season just a little bit more because I'm like, okay, yep. I can see the actualized Ayton, what he's going to be doing a bit more when it comes down to it.
So that's a great example of what I was talking about before, and that's exactly what happened to me. I didn't get a close enough look in the regular season last year to make that determination. When I saw it in the playoffs, I went, oh, okay, yeah. Maybe when you put him up against Giannis with no other big men, it you can see the cracks. And I love that, by the way. I absolutely love that. Like, as an aside, Bam Adebayo beasts more dudes than I feel like anyone in the league. Like, he just has random plays where he gets the ball 40 feet from the hoop, takes three dribbles, and just dunks all over some center. And you're like, wait, how did that happen? And then you watch him in the 2020 finals play Anthony Davis, and you're like, oh, okay, so Anthony Davis is a defensive god because all of a sudden he can't do that anymore. It's that leveling up, right, that we're talking about. And so I give Ayton, well, I'm not sitting here saying Ayton's a top 10 player, so it doesn't bother me that Giannis got the best of him and kind of poked a hole in that side of the ball for him. But I think the physicality that he plays with, his ability to protect the rim, and then he's better offensively than these other guys we just talked about. You know, he's not much of a passer, but that post game, that offensive rebounding, that roll gravity, I'm comfortable with him here.
How do you feel about his free throw numbers? Because I always felt like that was an area where I would like to see him improve, and I think that's the next step, honestly, for him offensively, because he's averaging less than fewer than three free throw attempts a game. And I find that to be really strange for somebody that's as big and physical and good in the post as him. What do you think's going on there?
That might just be a function of the way they run offense and the fact that they don't feed him in the post that much. You know, you could almost make the argument maybe they should feed him more, but I would imagine that's context dependent against teams that switch and get a mouse in the house and things like that. So, yeah, for a second, I thought you meant his free throw percentages, and I was like, wait, isn't he an okay? He's at 72% right now, isn't he? I thought that was okay. Yeah, I imagine it's just a function. I think a lot of these rolling bigs, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think they have massive free throw numbers because you won't get it from those actions.
No, off the top of my head, I can't think anyone that yeah. would be.
Okay. The next big, oh boy, this is okay. So the next couple start to get a little trickier, and then maybe we can talk about two or three on the cut line. I had him as a sub all-star last year. I have him as a sub all-star again this season because I just think his offensive versatility is too good with the mid-post short roll passing, the little rolling sweeping hook games. It's too good. I'm talking about Domantas Sabonis.
Ooh, I got it. I wish you all could have seen Ben when he was describing like the excitement of like the short roll game and the hooks. Like you're so excited to talk about Sabonis.
Nothing gets me going like short roll passing.
Here's the thing though. Here's my first reaction. I actually didn't think about this 10 minutes ago when we were on it. I might have him a little higher than a sub all-star. Like I think he might be knocking on the door of somebody with all-star impact. So yeah. why do you not quite have him up to all-star?
I love this question, and of course, I think it's, you know, people are going to say we're like being too negative or something, but I think you have to balance out and explain the sort of common strengths and weaknesses. So for me, the huge thing with Sabonis is that I think he's kind of a limited drop big defensively. And what I mean by that is the problem that I see in Indiana is they're playing two drop bigs. So you can't put somebody, like, think about what we just said with Mobley or with Jackson. You can play those guys next to pure drop big, not super mobile centers. And Sabonis himself isn't that immobile defensively. He's like, okay. But he also doesn't have a lot of pop at the rim vertically. He also doesn't have, like, tremendous awareness in the paint blowing things up. So I don't see him as a impact defender, but he has to play center. So it's kind of like the Nikola Jokic thing, except instead of having all-time level offense, you have pretty good offense, you know? Like I don't think of him as a great offensive player, but he's a nice offensive player. I think if you put him in different situations, you would even see the strength of some of the passing, the elbow game, all that stuff. But that's the concern for me for getting to the next level, especially sort of relative to some of the other bigs we discussed.
To me, of the players we've talked about, he's almost like the inverse of Evan Mobley, where I'm like, Mobley's still probably kind of a negative on offense, but that defensive impact just buoys him so much. And I feel like Sabonis is that flip, where in my mind, I feel like he's at least an all-star impact offensive player in that defense, even if it's neutral. I don't necessarily know if it's a negative. It's probably right around neutral for a big, but I think the totality of that probably, it definitely makes him a sub-all-star. But
yeah, and well, I think it's one of those things where in the regular season, I mean, right now his scoring numbers are 21%+9%. And again, we know he's a nice little passer and can play make a little bit in those options, not just short roll, but around the elbows when you give him the ball. You can have guys cut off of him. I mean, I think that's the kind of thing that if you believe, and I do, that his defense is passable in the regular season, you can make an argument for him being an all-star. And especially if you look at like, hey, he's having a great year. His numbers are up. His impact numbers are really, really good this season. I think he's in the top 35 in LeBron. He's in the top 30 in EPM from dunks and threes. Like you can go ahead and make that argument. I tend to think of it a little bit more longer game, what's going to happen in a postseason environment. And that's why he's in that category for me.
Okay, and I think he's probably been better the second half of the season after Rick Carlisle finally realized, like, hey, maybe we should give this guy the ball and let him run the offense a little bit more. Like, ever since then, I feel like he's been even a little bit better.
You've been watching a lot of Pacers, haven't you, Cody?
I don't know. I like to inflict pain upon myself once in a while, and watching Pacers is my way of doing that.
Is this like a Midwestern masochism thing?
You know, us Midwestern teams have to band together because all these other teams forget about us. And the Bulls kind of go on a little bit of a stretch with all of their injuries. People forget about us again. No one's talking about the Bucks. And I just need to show love to all my Midwestern guys.
In the next segment, Cody's going to break down Sadiq Bey's game in detail. That's a joke. You don't have to do that. His face got very nervous.
Yeah. You know what? I'm... I You know, that was terrible. Keep going. That was awful. I don't know what I was going to say. I was going to be like, I just watched a Pistons game 2 days ago. And I'm like, could I really have a whole segment on one game of watching Sadiq Bey 2 days ago? But I think I remember writing in my notes, I like Sadiq Bey. So that's my Sadiq Bey moment.
Okay, let's stay with Indiana. I did it last year. I'm going to do it again this season. Miles Turner, sub-All-Star.
Man.
Is it too high? Is it too high for you?
No. I think he's definitely a sub-All-Star.
Okay, then we're good because Or do you think you can jam him into the All-Star category? I just don't think his offense, like, he's a really, really strong rim protector. I mean, especially when you think of just shot blocking around the basket, one of the best in the league. And so you can build good defenses around him, and you can have, he's going to play drop heavily. You can have that on the defensive end. And then on offense, the thing that obviously is very tantalizing is the fact that he's always been able to pop and stretch out to the three-point line. Now, he's only, 34% this season or something? But I think he's got a long enough track record to show that he can make that shot with some regularity, and he's willing to let it fly. We've talked about, Al Horford and other players being reluctant. I don't think he's quite in that camp. So I think the two-way, I don't think he has enough offense to get me to All-Star. Basically, he's not really much of a passer either.
No, I agree with that. And I think something that's really interesting about Turner is that about a quarter of his possessions come on catch and shoots and catch and shoot opportunities. And he's scoring about 1.06 points per possession on those. He's scoring about 1.16 points per possession on post-ups. So he's an interesting case where his post-up efficiency is actually a little bit better than him just flying from three. And what I like actually most about his perimeter game is he kind of has a nice, putting the ball on the ground and finishing. Like, he has a couple of finishes where he has these huge strides where he just kind of floats to the rim, and even if he doesn't jam it, he has this soft finger roll that he finishes with. And I think that's really the underrated part about his scoring game. But, there was a Celtics game where they were playing recently, and I feel like a player like Robert Williams did a really good job of just shutting down that drive. Like, if you put a maybe a little bit smaller of a big that can stay in front of him, it kind of nullifies his offensive impact. So he's the sort of guy that you can see might get strategized out of a playoff matchup.
Yeah, I could see that. I have another defensive big on here because I think if you haven't noticed the theme, if you're a really good impact defender as a big man, you just kind of need to be passable enough offensively to get into this category, because these are really important players, even still today, to have these kind of needle movers as big men. That's my philosophical approach to this based on the evidence that I've seen. So I don't get to watch enough of this team, but I feel like it's here. I feel like I had him as a final cut last year, and this year I'm going in, baby. Jakob Poeltl, sub-All-Star.
Oh, you're going there.
I'm going in.
The Poeltl stands are going to be so excited right now.
He's a really good defender, and he uses his length and size. It kind of reminds me, not that they're similar at all as players, but it reminds me of watching Tim Duncan for a while, and you just constantly go well, wait a second, why is that shot always difficult for that guy? Because they don't look like they're moving really fast or they have this really explosive kind of physicality or athleticism, but his strength and his length, that combination, and just the fact that he knows how to do it now. He knows how to drop. He knows how to be around the rim. I think it's really solid. And then offensively, the passing is hit or miss for me. He's got some okay stuff in there. I saw him make a great short roll pass this morning in a game I was watching, but little floater, little soft push shot game going on. Like, I don't think he takes too much off the table offensively and get in there and offensive rebound as well. So I think he's a good player now. I think it's time.
First of all, he's a plus minus god, which is always something that you want to see with this kind of a thing.
Do we have that over multiple seasons? That's what I kind of start to look for, is, the 40 game signal is okay, that can be just a lot of noise. But Even when I'm doing a team like this, if I see a player whose game has been consistent or growing in the same direction for two or three seasons, and then we get these beautiful plus minus samples, then I'm like, oh, okay, so whatever's happening on that team, this guy's probably got a consistently strong correlation for a reason.
Yeah, he's the kind of guy that when you go down to his basketball reference plus minus point, like, it's just green. Like, green.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this guy, this is... Yeah, he's... Defensively, we talked about this with... It's weird. It's going to be like I'm saying something nice about James Harden's defense, but we said in, like, the Nets segment a few episodes back where it's like they made an adjustment one game where it's like, James, stand right here, and then all of a sudden it's just kind of, like, walled off. I think it might have even been Indiana's attack during that game, where it's like, yep, just having a body there is really effective. And Jakob Poeltl is a really big body.
He's
like
a huge body.
7'1", and he knows where to be. A, B, he's a very just strong rim protector. Like, he's getting his hand in there. He's blocking shots. He's just disrupting everything in the paint around there. The offensive thing, I think this is a really interesting philosophical conversation. Because he doesn't take anything off the table offensively in the sense that he's, like, trying to do too much. But in that way, is he doing enough to actually have some kind of a positive offensive impact, especially when he has minimal offensive attempts and they're all off of, like, putbacks or rolls in the pick and roll?
They're not 100% off of putbacks and rolls.
Yeah, but... You're not going to sit here and tell me that, like, Poeltl has this nice little, like, self-creation offensive game.
No. And I think the fact that he doesn't try to do that is a positive in this case, because, you know, would I describe him as a player that is a positive offensive player on an average or above average team? No, I don't think so. But again, it's the philosophical thing where the fact that he can be a decent little passer, he is efficient in the actions that he actually runs or finishes as a role man or whatever. I think you just don't have that big of a negative as an offensive player. And if you're not that big of a negative as an offensive player, and you're a nice, healthy, positive, a solid positive as a defender, in his case, really good defender, I think that's sub all-star conversation.
Can I give you a number?
Okay. Numbers on thinking basketball? No.
We're going to play a quick game. You're going to guess what stat I'm talking about. 45.8%. What is that for Jakob Poeltl?
45.8%. That is that can't be the number of his assisted field goal percentage. No, that's not possible. I'm thinking intensely. That's the percentage of his offense at the rim.
Not quite. Do you want to keep going?
No, this is horrible. This game.
That's his free throw percentage.
Oh yeah. I did. You know what's really funny? I had a note about that. It would help if I looked at my notes while we actually talked during the show. I took them for a reason. I had a big question mark. What is going on with his free throw percentage? It's so weird.
Yeah, it's awful. Two of the last 3 years have been sub 50%, which is like all time terrible territory. Like Andres Biedrin's right now is looking like, yes, finally I have company.
Let's move on. So last season I had this player as a sub all-star. This season, oh, I just have him right on the cut line, Cody, and I think I'm going to go out. I think I'm going to go on the other side of the cut line with Chicago center Nikola Vucevic.
Ooh.
How do you feel about this?
Vucevic is interesting cuz, you know, this was a, I don't want to say a disagreement, but where we kind of diverged in our top 10 point guard episode where I was looking specifically at that season. And Vooch is just, he hasn't been doing it this year. It feels like he's having, I don't know if he's not fitting in with like the four guard Chicago attack. I don't know. This year, I'm not super impressed by Vooch. Why is he in this category for you?
So you're saying like you don't even think of him as a top 75 player anymore?
Actually, I do have him in the four, which to me is just like...
I have him as...
In this area. He's at least in this zone, but I could see him being out.
I could say we did not talk about this numerical 1, 2, 3, 4 thing at all, and I use it to organize the players as well, and I have him as a four. I don't know what's going on. This is some kind of weird synergy that's happening live, right as we record. I just figured people, you know, history of being an all-star player. I had him as a sub-all-star last year. He still can play. Like, think about what he can do offensively. He's still a good elbow passer. He can still play pick and pop, a little pick and roll with the floater. When he pops, it's to the three. He can stretch to the three. Is he truly, like, where he is as a shooter now, or is it just a slight downturn? I think one thing we should mention in this episode is a lot of people are having down shooting years from three-point land, right? The entire league is lower league-wide on three-point percentages than it was last season by a mile. the huge, huge difference that I can see is on open and wide open three-point shots. About 87% of three-pointers in the last two seasons are open or wide open, according to the way NBA.com categorizes it. That's at least 6 feet away from your defender when you shoot it, and open is 4 to 6 feet. And last season, the league shot 39% on open threes and just about 35.5% on, let me try that one again. 39% on wide open threes and about 35.5% on what they call open threes. And this season, those numbers are down like 2%. You're at like 37% on wide open threes and closer to like 33-something on open threes. And I think that's probably shooting background, right? Instead of having these build posters and huge curtains up as a backdrop, now you have fans again, so it's a harder backdrop. And I think the other thing is it just helps defenses to have fans in the gym and spurn on that kind of energy. So your intensity defensively is a little bit higher. And that means, yeah, even though the shots are open, as we've talked about a couple times in the last few episodes, you have to work harder for them. So I don't know if I'm completely sold that like Vooch is really whatever he's at this season, 32% three-point shooter or whatever it is, 33%. But I do think if you have a guy with that offensive skill set, and he's 34-35% from three, he can post up, he can play pick and roll, he can play pick and pop, he can pass from the elbows. I don't think it's a perfect environment for him with the offense that they run now, because they're going to run less through him. But I think that's because they have a little bit more, they have more riches, they have more toys in Chicago. They have DeMar DeRozan, who we'll talk about. They have Lonzo Ball, who we'll talk about. They have Zach LaVine, who we'll talk about. And it's like, on defense, do I get a little concerned about him in the postseason? I do, but it's kind of like Sabonis. It's one of those things where he holds his own a little bit in the regular season. I don't know. We spent way more time than I thought I would on this. I'm surprised. I assume people would want to hear more about a player like this. And you started with like, I don't know, he's not even in the conversation.
I don't think I said he's not in the conversation. Don't send the Twitter at me like that. I don't want to take that attack.
They're going to come after me. Don't worry.
Good. So I don't want to make the final. I don't want to make the final valuation on this. On the 3-point percentage thing, though, if you go back to the 2017-18 season and come up to here, he's shooting about 36% on threes in that entire span. Yeah. And this year is about 3 percentage points below that. So I wouldn't be surprised if that number went up as the season went, or even next year, seeing that kind of go back to that 36-37% range, because he was closer to 40% the last couple of seasons. So, yeah, I mean, this is one of those players that I'm so on the fence on that it's not my show. I don't want to make it. You make the call.
I'm going to go out. I think I've got it strictly to 50 players this season, and so he's going to be one of my final cuts. I'm going to go out. And I think while we're on these big names, another big name, big man for me that people talk about a lot, but again, I'm going to go out on him. I just don't quite think he's in this sub-all-star tier, and that's Kristaps Porzingis. I want more defense from him. He's shooting 28% on threes. I assume he's got to be a better three-point shooter than that. So that drags down a lot of his numbers. But even with that, he still has like decent impact numbers this season. I don't know. I don't entirely still know what to make of him, but I think I'm more comfortable not thinking of him as a top 50 guy right now.
Porzingis's career arc is really interesting to me, because I do legitimately think a couple of years ago that he was more solidly in this sub-all-star category. Like, I think his defense was better. Yep. I think post some of these injuries, he feels slower. Like, his rotations don't feel as strong, and his rim protection numbers seem to be a little off. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, I think he was like a literal top-tier rim protector, in the sense that he was deterring people from driving. He was blocking everything. He was making people shoot a lot worse at the rim. That doesn't seem to be the case. So when I'm looking at this in like a three-year kind of span, I think I would be more willing to put him in the sub-all-star category, but offensively, he's really kind of been a nightmare
for
the Maverick.
Yeah, can't post up. The elbow touches don't fit super well. Not a great passer. Can't really penetrate. Maybe what he had before the injuries was lost. And then going back to multi-year plus-minus, the last three seasons, Dallas is better with him on the bench. If you use Basketball Reference's calculation, they're about 0.6 points better when he heads to the bench over 3 years. So yeah, he's another cut for me. The other two cuts in this category, by the way, were Montrezl Harrell, who I think I've talked about extensively, his defensive problems and how I don't think what he does carries over into the playoffs or against, you know, competition that clamps down on that versus just a random Tuesday night. And then another one last year who was a cut, he's a cut again for me. I think he's a pretty similar player, and that's Jonas Valanciunas.
Do you want to talk about both of them, or do you want to...
I want to, unless you have anything to say, I want to talk about neither. I want to get to my last big man and then move on to a new position, but I'm volleying it your way.
I have Valanciunas higher than you.
Okay. Well, is that because of his defense or his offense?
I think maybe he's had a bit of a down year. I think, once again, this is another one of those players that when you look at his post-up numbers compared to the last couple seasons, it's pretty significantly down, like at sub 50% on post-ups, I think. And last couple of seasons, he's actually kind of been around the 57, 58% mark, which is pretty efficient for a post-up. And I don't know. I feel like defensively, he's not particularly strong. This is another place where I think he's maybe regressed just a little bit, but he's still a huge body that you can throw out there, just a really big body. So I don't know what to make of this. I feel like, once again, when I look at the last couple of years, I'd be more willing to put him at the sub all-star, but if I'm looking strictly at just this year, I'd be more willing to see him being lower or out.
Well, just compare him to Vucevic. I mean, how do you think, would you rather have, they're similar in a sense, but to me Vucevic is just a better, more robust offensive package, and then I'm not sure how much Valanciunas gives you in addition defensively. Do you buy that? Do you see them as an interesting compare and contrast?
When you put it that way, I do feel like Vucevic is definitely a better offensive player. Defensively, I haven't studied their defense that closely to make that comparison, but offensively, I'd be pretty comfortable saying Vucevic.
That's kind of where I landed. That's exactly sort of the final calculus for me. So I do have one more big man. I saved him for last. I had him as a cut last season. I've been trying to figure out what to do with him for a while. And I'm just, it's again, Cody, it's one of those things. You get a couple more years of experience. You watch the guy more. He does the little things a little bit better. You're nodding like you know who I'm going to say. Do you know who I'm going to say?
I'm so excited right now. I'm so excited.
Who do you think I'm going to say?
Are you going to say Jared Vanderbilt?
Oh, I'm not, because I don't count him as a big man.
Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah, we have to come back to him later.
I ruined some excitement. Okay.
Oh, my goodness. What a teaser.
I got really excited about talking about Vanderbilt. I'll hold it. I'll contain it.
I'm talking about John Collins.
Ooh, okay.
I just think he's gotten better defensively. And so I don't think of him as... I think in the past I was just too hung up on him being a defensive problem or a defensive negative, and I just don't see that anymore. I just think he reads the game better. He's kind of making smarter plays from night to night. He obviously has some vertical pop around the rim. You know, you don't think of him as a great rim protector, but he's a good athlete. He's a big physical body. And then on offense, I like that offensive package, don't you? You get the pick and pop from the same guy. You know, he's just really good at either vertical rim finishing or floating out to the three-point line. I'm trying to pull up his shooting, his scoring right now. 20 points per 75, plus 7% true shooting. And I think you get that from this dual threat of, like, he floats to the line and shoots 39% from three, or he can catch it in the paint. He can go up and get a lob. Good roll man. I don't know. I've been hung up on him for a while, but I think the time has come.
Here's my one thing with John Collins, and this is probably not fair, and I think this is a conversation I have with myself often when I'm thinking about, like, evaluating players. I don't necessarily see him being as impactful if he's not next to somebody like Trae Young. Like, he's not the kind of offensive star where if I were a team that didn't have much offensive talent, where I'd be like, I want John Collins on my team because he's going to help me rebuild the offense. I don't necessarily think he has that sort of skill set. He's a much better play finisher. I know this comparison gets thrown out a lot, and I don't necessarily love it, but he's in the lineage more of like an Amari Stoudemire than somebody else that you're going to give the ball to and be like, even like a Vucevic, like we're talking about. Like, he's much more Stoudemire than like a Vucevic in terms of creation and helping an offense.
I agree completely, but I also do think at this point that a ton of competitive teams are going to be able to have a guy that can either run pick and roll or make some of those passes you're thinking of, those roll passes, those lob passes. I mean, we went through the point guard list last week is so deep that we've got really, really good point guards at, like, you know, the 13th or 14th best point guard in the league, which of course was setting ourselves up for nasty grams. Let's move on. What position would you like to do next? We have the wings and we have the smalls.
First of all, with that all said, John Collins is very solidly in the category for me. Let's do smalls.
Yeah, I think we should do smalls and finish with wings, because smalls we can be a little quicker with because we spent so much time talking about these guys last week. So I will try to get on my bike and expeditiously make our way through this category. For the smalls, going to the all-star level, John Morant, James Harden. I'm just going to use the same designations we used last week. John Morant, James Harden, Drew Holiday, I have in as an all-star.
Absolutely.
Luke had him last year as well. Is that my second Milwaukee? That's my second Milwaukee Buck player, just keeping track for Cody. He's got a little counter behind him. Luka Doncic, Stephen Curry, Trae Young, Chris Paul, and then as I mentioned last week, he's injured right now, but I would also have Damian Lillard in that all-star category, I should say. I'm still not counting Kyrie Irving. I'm sure by the playoffs, if he's healthy, well, I can't say I'm sure because I don't know how I'm going to factor in the fact that this dude only plays half the playoff games. That's going to really throw off the calculations for me.
I don't want to talk about Kyrie Irving.
Yeah. The other one in the big category that I should mention is Ben Simmons, because obviously he hasn't played this year. I don't know if he's going to play. So he's an omission. He's an omission by omission.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Okay. Now let's get to the sub-all-stars for the small category. And again, we'll breeze through a ton of these because we spent a lot of time talking about them last week. I have Darius Garland. I've talked about him being right on the edge of all-star level play. This gets back to this thing that I mentioned last week of just being a young guy. I don't know what happens when the chips get down. His physical maturity still probably has additions in the future. So I got Darius Garland as a sub-all-star, Fred VanVleet as a sub-all-star, Mike Conley as a sub-all-star. I had him as a sub-all-star last year. I'm keeping him in this category, and he's going to fall off a cliff at some point. Kyle Lowry, sub-all-star. And then there's some of these young guys that we didn't get to talk about last week just for time. And these guys are, as I mentioned, all in this same tier for me. And I don't know if I'm ready to go all-star with any of them, but sub-all-star for a lot of them, I'm getting real comfortable with. So someone like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is in this group for me. LaMelo Ball is in this group for me. Lonzo Ball is in this group for me. Cody, which Ball brother is better?
Oh, I think that's really context specific. Like,
yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course. In an earlier round of a draft, you'd probably want to take someone like LaMelo because you can at least know that you have some of your offense handled. But if you already have some offensive talent, I would take Lonzo, I think.
Yeah, I agree, which I think makes it really, really hard to figure out which of those guys is better right now. But I think they're both, and it's the nature of this tier. You get in this tier and you have to split hairs or really talk about kind of best outcome versus worst outcome, things like that. I think both these guys are really good, obviously for different reasons. Another guy we didn't get to last week, I had him as a cut last season. I just wasn't quite confident enough that he was there. And I think he's improved this season, and so he's clearly there for me. I know the folks down in the Alamo absolutely love him, but DeJounte Murray is another sub-all-star guard for me.
Of anything in his game, his passing has really taken off. And I don't know if I just didn't watch enough Spurs before, but especially for a guy that doesn't have like a really strong scoring ability, he's able to make a lot of reads on offense. And I think he gains a lot of his value from that ability to do that. And defensively, I think maybe with his increased load, his offense may have taken his defense may have taken a little bit of a step back this year, but I still think when ramped up, when in a playoff situation, he could ramp himself up to be an all defensive caliber player once again. And yeah, I think he's in here too.
He's one of those guys that's interesting in the long term, because I think as you start to add that polish that we've alluded to multiple times in this episode, just his physical skills, his tools, the length, his quickness. And I got to disagree just a touch. I actually think his work in the mid-range has come along to complement the passing. That's what I see when I check in on them. I don't watch the Spurs as much as a lot of my other high sort of league pass nightly viewings, but I've seen enough of them now to get a feel for, oh, especially if you don't contain him at the point of attack when they set the screen up high, he's going to snake that pick and roll right into the mid-range, and that's kind of where he does his best work as a passer, and I think where he's most comfortable almost scoring, just like little floaters or that little 12-footer. I think those have gone together to really help him as an offensive player.
I agree with you, but I also feel like he relies on that mid-range a little too much. He's a little too comfortable in that range. I feel like there's a good amount of times when he's running in the pick and roll where he pulls up, and I'm just like, take another dribble, take one more dribble, get a little bit closer, take that length into the basket, see if you can get some contact, see if you can get a finish. And while I do think that is part of the improvement process, and I think he'll level it out as he gets more mature as a point guard, I think that's holding him a little bit back with his scoring efficiency right now.
I think that's probably true. Yeah. I think I had two more smalls. I'm trying to look at my cut lines here. Yeah, I'm going to go in with two more smalls. I'm going to get crazy. Okay? For the fourth time in 4 years, I thought he wasn't going to make it this season, and I just think the last month, especially since they've been starting him, Marcus Smart is back at it's the combo, Cody, of really 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 good defense. And then what I like, again, earlier in the year, I was like, this might be it. This might be the year I move him down to that next tier. But he's shooting the three less and calling his own number less and exchanging it for more playmaking and almost playing more of like a quote unquote pure point guard from what I see with Boston, which is a huge shift for them as an aside, going from like Denny Schroeder point of attack offense to Smart just trying to set these guys up. And I think I've talked about it endlessly. I don't need to belabor the point. I think that's really good value on a good playoff team.
Marcus Smart is maybe my favorite player archetype, like, of all time. I love this idea of like strong defensive guard that's also a really good secondary passer that just keeps things moving, like the Nate McMillan from the 90s, or even Dennis Johnson with the Celtics. Lonzo Ball's in that category. It's the kind of player you just want on your team. I hate saying a winning player. I literally just said a winning player, but that's exactly what I mean.
Well, speaking of winning players and players you want on your team, this is a hard one. I have him in. I've gone back and forth repeatedly. I think I'm going to leave him in. I just think his defense is too good. I don't know what to do now. I don't know what to do. How do you feel about Alex Caruso?
I think Alex Caruso, again, actually, I could have thrown him into that last one.
Exactly. That's what made me think of it. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a tremendous passer. He's actually maybe in that same tier of passer. I think Lonzo's probably a better passer. Lonzo's definitely a better passer.
Yeah, but I think the difference between those guys and Caruso is when Caruso starts the thing, like Smart can at least run a pick and roll. He can at least throw the lob to Rob Williams. He can at least skip to the corner and hit an open three. Lonzo, of course, is just generalized dynamic passing is really strong. I think Caruso's better in that category. I don't know if Bulls fans get as comfortable when Caruso starts running pick and roll, and like that's the thing. So he to me feels like a bigger negative than these guys. But certainly in the first couple months of the season, I thought his defense was so good that I mean he's basically right at the edge of this. I think I'm gonna leave him in. I'm feeling the Midwestern love from you today. So
I love it. This is great. This is great content. Can I try and slip in another Midwesterner that you didn't bring up?
Yeah.
I don't know if you count this person as a wing. Where's Anthony Edwards?
I count that person as a wing.
Okay, he's a wing? He's not a small?
I'm just thinking like smalls are like the mostly the point guard designation, mostly. Point guard designation are like really small shooting guards who also play point guard or combo.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Timberwolves fans, keep note. Those are two Timberwolves players that I've tried to shoehorn in earlier than I need to.
Well, man, there's another Timberwolves player, which, yeah, we should mention that Cody lives in Minneapolis. there's another Timberwolves player. I didn't know what to do with D'Angelo Russell. Yeah, because I do kind of like things about his offensive game. And then, of course, we did the video earlier this season on his defensive quarterbacking and communicating, and I think this is becoming more valuable, this kind of like general team awareness on defense and communicating and being able to do that in these more complex defensive systems. And so that gives him, you know, that for me takes him from like, oh, he's a big negative on defense to like, oh, is he a small negative? Is he a neutral? I don't even know how to view D'Angelo Russell's defense at this point.
This is interesting because I feel like we're in an interesting age of basketball right now. And I'm coming up with this on the spot. I literally thought of this when you were talking. But I feel like they were kind of like for like the first 70 years, 50 years, 60 years of the NBA. It's like, all right, we have our point guard, shooting guard, small forward. Like these are the specific roles you're going to be playing. The four is going to be doing this. The five is going to be doing this. And then I feel like it kind of went away from that maybe 5-6 years ago where it's like, oh, everyone just kind of plays whatever positions. But I feel like everyone kind of has roles again. But I think what's different this time around is that the roles aren't set from team to team. Like it's like, oh, this player is going to play this specific role. And because of that, he's going to be elevated because he doesn't have to do anything outside of that role. And I think D'Angelo Russell is playing that sort of perfect role where he's next to Anthony Edwards, who you don't necessarily want running the offense. Whereas D'Angelo Russell, you don't want to be like the main offensive attack kind of guy. And you need someone that's able to feed Karl Anthony Towns. And you need somebody that's going to be directing traffic with some of this defensive, young defensive talent on the Timberwolves. So with all that said, I'm not sure what to make of Russell.
Well, I think let me take the easier way out. I think if you're doing this thing and you just said, Ben, based on like the first 45 or 50 games of the season, is he playing like a sub all-star? Is he having a sub all-star season? I think that's an easier argument to make because especially in context in Minnesota, I don't think people realize that. I don't think people realize this, I should say. The Timberwolves are like +7 per 100 possessions when D'Angelo Russell is on the court. So we looked it up recently, but for most of this season, when he's been healthy, and they've also had Towns and Anthony Edwards, they've had their regular lineup plus D'Angelo Russell, they're playing like a 50-win team. So it's not like we're talking about this archetype on a team that's just some middling 35 or 40-win team just trucking along, trying not to trip over itself. Like, this is actually, what you're seeing has actually been successful basketball on the floor, and I think he's been a part of it. So I don't know what to do with him in a more general sense, but I do think he's having a nice season. Now, guys who are not having a nice season, who I've looked at many times before and maybe had on the team in the past, but they're on the cut side for me. Guys like CJ McCollum, De'Aaron Fox. I think I would have Malcolm Brogdon in, but he's just like injured again. I don't know what's going on with him. He's only played 28 games, and he's got this thing with his Achilles. Yeah.
I feel like it's the case with him every year. I've always been a Brogdon fan, then he just doesn't play.
Yeah, Spencer Dinwiddie coming back from injuries. I used to be a huge Spencer Dinwiddie champion on this show. He's another guy on the wrong side of it this season for me. So that's it for the smalls. That leaves the wings. Are we good? Finally moving on to the wings. There's no more players that you can spoil now. We were at the end.
No, this is it. This is the moment.
Okay. All-star wings. Let's just get those out of the way because I had 10 more than any other position. Ooh. I had 10 guys who I called wings in the all-star category. Devin Booker, Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, Jimmy Butler, Kevin Durant, Chris Middleton, that would be my third Milwaukee Buck, second year in a row. LeBron James from the Los Angeles Lakers. Zach LaVine, that's both Bulls wings, by the way. And Paul George, because I should add that I have DeMar DeRozan as the 10th wing here. And I saved him for last because if you remember last season, I was just perseverating about like, I don't know what to do with DeMar DeRozan. Is he in? Is he out? Is this volume score? He's in San Antonio. His plus minus numbers are negative everywhere he goes. He goes to Chicago. He looks like 96 Jordan all of a sudden. You know, his plus minus numbers are phenomenal this season. The Bulls are about plus 14 per 100 points better with him on the court. So he's a really interesting evaluation, but I just want to point out that I do have him all the way back up at All-Star. I'm pretty comfortable with that. And it just goes to show you how challenging some of the contextual pieces can be with some of these players.
Absolutely. Before this season, he was like the anti-Jakob Poeltl, where you like go down in Basketball Reference. It's like red, 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 red. And like, what's going on with a guy that can create so well for himself? But he's, I don't know. He's in a great context for himself this season.
Well, yeah, and I should add, I've mentioned with DeRozan before that, like, the reason you still talk about him as a top 50 player, even with all that negative red, is because in the exact same vein, that means he's playing big minutes on these successful teams. And when he's on the floor, his team maybe is like, I don't know, a 51-win team. And when he goes to the bench, it's a 53-win team. And what does that mean to take on such a big load on a 53-win team? And yada, yada, yada. Anyway, the sub-all-star wings, I didn't have that many, just the way I categorized them. I only have five.
Okay.
As of right now.
And apparently we know two of them, maybe.
Do we? Who? What? What? How do we know any of these? I haven't tipped my hand at all.
Well, we're at least talking about two people.
Oh, then you mean we're going to talk about the Minnesota players?
Yes, exactly.
We are going to talk about the Minnesota players. That's true.
Are they not two of five? Gasp.
I have Anthony Edwards in.
Okay.
I think he's at this level now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have former Minnesota Timberwolf Andrew Wiggins in.
Wait, starting all-star forward?
Correct.
Andrew Wiggins?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Correct. And if we go back to our numerical system, he's a strong sub all-star for me and has been all season. It goes back to that question you asked at the top. Like, just the first couple weeks of the season, I started thinking, oh boy, Andrew Wiggins, what a great third or fourth piece. Like, this is beautiful. The way he's defending, he's playing the Harrison Barnes role, but just on a different level, right? I think he's better on the ball defensively, and his three-point shooting, it looked, you know, I don't expect him to shoot 42% for his career, but, I mean, it's legit. And then you're taking away the responsibility of all the playmaking, and you're just saying, shoot this three, or put it on the deck and attack closeouts, and play within this system. I think it's really nice.
Can we go back to Anthony Edwards for a second?
Well, hold on. We can circle back to him because I want to make the connection from the archetype that I just presented.
Yep.
That Wiggins is playing in Golden State to another guy that I like went back and forth on, and then I'm also just like, no, I trust this player too much, and that's Mikal Bridges in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Right? Just this like really good wing defender, versatile, switchy, point of attack, long, and then on offense, doesn't do too much, but will knock down threes. And I know I can trust him to knock down threes in intense games where he's playing defense at a reasonable clip. And yeah, he's I think Wiggins is probably better attacking closeouts or whatever, but he's just added a little bit more every year he's been in the league. So that leaves me with, who have I said so far? Anthony Edwards, Andrew Wiggins, Mikal Bridges, two guys I've talked about as all-stars before. I'm interested to see what you think about this one. Bradley Beal, sub all-star. I don't think he's going to shoot 28% from three, but I also have decided that he's not, the way he plays and the volume, you think of him as like, oh, he should be in this lineage of great shooters that shoot 38% from three. And I'm just convinced he hasn't been over 35% in like 4 or 5 years. I'm just convinced it's like 34, 35% is the number for him. But I think he's too skilled as a scorer and offensive player. To not be here, I think. And then Jaylen Brown is probably, I've talked about him as being closer to an all-star before. Those are my five guys that I have in.
Okay. Where do you want to start with them?
Well, we can go back to Anthony Edwards if you have a question or a comment.
Let's go back to Anthony Edwards. So this is, I'm going to take this term out for a spin again. This is just my favorite term. And, you know, oh, you're shaking your head at me.
Don't do it.
You know it's coming. You know it's coming.
They're going to be drinking.
That's all I've ever wanted.
Shift that glass right into your hand. Go ahead.
People to start filling out their bingo cards for what I'm going to be saying. Anthony Edwards, the thing that's interesting right now is there's a couple of things. Number one, it's interesting that he's kind of a lead offensive guard on the team, but he might be the third best passer in the starting lineup behind Towns and Russell.
Yeah, I don't think he's a better passer than either of those guys. Yeah.
No. And along with that, when Towns goes to the bench, so when he's on the court with Towns, he's scoring about 22.7 per 75, -1 efficiency. And they're at about +6 on offense, +5.5 net. When Towns is on the bench, he goes up a little bit. He's like 24.4 per 75, just a shade under plus two. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's more or less negligible on both ends. Like, you see, he scores a bit more, and he's a bit more efficient when Towns is off. But it's not a lot, especially assists-wise. His assists actually drop when Towns goes to the bench. And so I don't know what to make of that. I don't know what to make of what Anthony Edwards could realistically be, because he doesn't seem to be a guy that when he becomes the offensive focal point, that he just all of a sudden becomes the guy on offense where he's just going to be spraying shots from everywhere and passing up everyone else. I don't know. I don't know what to make of those numbers.
Okay, so is the thought here that he's not ready for this category yet?
The thought here is, I think those numbers when he's on with Towns are the numbers of a guy that should very solidly be in this category. So I think my argument that is that he is clearly a sub-all-star in my mind, but I don't know if he's showing indicators of jumping up to a higher tier in the future.
Ooh, that's interesting. See, I interpret that in a really positive way, watching Minnesota games. And of course, we have a resident Minnesota fanatic in the Thinking Basketball family. Our video coordinator, Mike De La Rosa, watches every second of every Minnesota Timberwolves game. I think, to me, that's maturity. Like, from what I'm seeing, he doesn't necessarily force stuff. And he can be a bit streaky, so there are games where he starts drilling threes and he'll up the volume a little bit, but I don't think he yet has the skill set, nor is he playing in a system, even when Russell goes to the bench. And did you have those numbers, by the way, when Russell and Towns were off? Or
no, it was just Towns. I think the minute load was too low for me to want to say anything.
Yeah, and I think that might be it, right, where you just usually have another true point guard out there, where I don't think he's forcing extra stuff or trying to do more at point of attack, play more pick and roll, things like that, because I don't think he's there yet, quite there yet as a creator, and his passing still is lagging. I expect his passing actually to grow, which would be something that would in some ways support his overall growth with handling more load, which is what you're thinking of when you're thinking of, like, can I see an indicator where some other star goes off the court and his numbers spike? So I still think there's plenty of room for growth in that category.
Okay. I definitely think there's room for growth, but I guess I don't look at too many. I haven't looked at many young players that are around his age to see and to compare. So I just thought I'd throw it out there.
No, I don't think it's a thing with a lot of young players. I mean, he's still so young, but I think he's also starting to show that even on both sides of the ball, that he's like a player. He's good. I mean, the question for me is whether it's premature based on the things I've said about young players, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just drinking too much Minnesota Kool-Aid, but I like...
You're not.
The land of the lakes produces good Kool-Aid. So, okay. So that's everyone I have on the team, and I believe that's 50 players. But there are a few more guys in this category I want to talk about, because I just went back and forth repeatedly, and one of them is Jared Vanderbilt. And the question... There's two questions, really. There's three questions, because he only plays 26 minutes a game. Like, one, is his permanent value enough to get him there? Could you play him 35 minutes on a contending team? Two, is his defense, we've talked about these archetypes of, like, really strong all defensive guys who are negatives on offense, but their offense isn't negative enough to pull them down. You know, to be clear, to be a sub all-star player, you need to move the needle by, like, I don't know, a point per game or 2 points per 100 possessions. Like, that's a top 50 player in the NBA. That's a really good player, but not these huge earth shifters like all-stars or all NBA players. Jared Vanderbilt, if he's got, like, all league defense, or you want to put him in conversations for defensive player of the year, which is premature to me, but if you're there, I don't know, because on offense, he's like a ridiculously good offensive rebounder, and you just ask him to cut an offensive rebound and you can work around the fact that he's not a shooter. Like, it's really nice that he gets to play with Towns, because Towns can space and he's such a great shooter, so you can play them both out there. I don't know. I don't want two non-shooters, but how big of a negative is he? Is it? I went back and forth a lot on this because I feel really comfortable saying Jared Vanderbilt's a top 75 player.
I literally wrote, the first sentence I wrote for him is probably the most interesting player to me in this conversation. Because I had that whole thing, like, defensively, like, he's a wrecking ball. He disrupts everything. And I think when you rope in like the rim protection numbers, like the volume of rim protection and how much he changes shots near the rim, I think he's a step down from guys like Evan Mobley and Jaren Jackson on defense. But when we're talking about perimeter destruction, like he's that same ilk of Matisse Thybulle. Like I don't think he's at that same level, but he's that same idea where his absurd length is, he's like what, 6'11"? And his hands are just everywhere. Like, you can't make an errant pass around him because he will get that. And he could guard people at the point of attack. I really like him defensively. But yeah, on offense, like you were saying, 78% of his offense comes from cuts, putbacks, and transition. 78% of them. And his passing, like, I'm pretty sure he does a lot of pitches, a lot of DHOs. So really, like, Mike, this is a call to action for you. Please, what is the best pass you've seen Jared Vanderbilt throw this year? I want to see Jared Vanderbilt's best pass. I'm not even hating on him. I'm legitimately curious to know what his best pass is.
He doesn't need to throw passes. He just goes and gets. I was going through this and I was like, does he remind me of Dennis Rodman in this weird modern way where you have this guy come out of nowhere in a sense and he just gets better and better defensively? He doesn't necessarily fit a classic defensive archetype. He's really big. He's long. He's switchable. Like you, even in this podcast, you're like, what position does Jared Vanderbilt play? And then on offense, it seems that the goal for him on offense is to just do nothing and do as little as possible. But also, yes, cut and finish. And your offensive rebounding is insane. How do you do that in 2022 with all that space? So yeah, like I said, I've gotten really comfortable over the season with, if I had a draft, I don't think I can name 75 dudes I'd rather take than Vanderbilt. It feels premature. I'm not comfortable enough yet to put him on the sub all-star side of the line. I have another guy in that category from the Memphis Grizzlies, Desmond Bane. This dude's like, I think everyone knows about Bane, and depending on how much Grizzlies you've watched, you have a feel for him. But the thing I would say is that the dude is legit. Just like, you're going to go to war with him and you're comfortable. It's almost like what's happening with Gary Trent in Toronto. Like you just, or even Dylan Brooks in Memphis. Like you just start to get more trust in, oh, okay, yeah, he's not just a 3-and-D player. He can, oh yeah, he's dropping him at 40%. But when he gets hot, he's going to go for like 20 and a quarter. And his scoring, like he's actually 22 points per 75 plus 2%. He's a 90% free throw shooter. He's a 41% three-point shooter. His defense is decent. Like, he's big, physical, active body. He's engaged in the game. Like, they remind me a little of the 90s Sonics, and he just is another one of these guys that you'd be like, yeah, no, Desmond Bane, he's a good player. We've got just a ton of good players.
And what I like about the way that they've been playing him this year is they're not just like, oh, this is a good three-point shooter. We're just going to station you on the three-point line and you're going to space for Ja. No, they've given him a lot more on-ball responsibility this year. And I think it's shown that he still has some development in his passing. Like, if he notches up his passing ability a bit more, he's very solidly going to be in this category. But I like some of these reps that I'm seeing from him on offense as a scorer. And I think that's going to help him grow in the long run. I love this Grizzlies team.
Okay, next young guy, the exact same thing. I don't know what to do with these guys. OG Anunoby in Toronto, he's been on my cut line forever, and I still just don't feel like I have enough on offense or defense to get him there. But at the same time, I also feel like if you just list quality starters and good playoff basketball players, you can't list that many players before you get to OG Anunoby. He does have some self-creation. He does have a little bit of passing now, like his handle's gotten better. He can hit threes both with his own generated offense or off the catch. And then again, defensively, like, not someone who I would say is at an all defensive level yet, but he's like a solid, good defender. I'm comfortable with him on the other side of this line, but he still feels like a guy every season where I'm like, oh yeah, is the OG thing happening? And it's not quite happening, but he's also kind of solid.
And I think he keeps getting better every year. He keeps adding just a little bit more. I think I'd be more comfortable putting him in this category than you would. Maybe I like his defense a little bit more. I don't know
this season.
I think so. Just a little bit more. And I think something that really hurts, and it probably eats at him, he didn't play at all in Toronto's championship run, did he? Not in the playoff.
No. He started to get run in the following season, which was the bubble.
He was injured, though, I think. I think that was part of the issue. I think he was out with injury. I don't know what my overall point is. My overall point
is I can't
is
be
I
expected
to
remember
him.
Anything before 2020. That's an incredible Herculean feat.
Sorry, I remember that Toronto Raptors run really well because of a certain team they beat in the conference finals. OG Anunoby's good. This is hurting too much. Let's move on to something.
Did they win four games in a row against the Bucks?
Stop it. Fred VanVleet had a child and came back and never missed a three again.
He still hasn't missed. Another young guy. Let me see. How many of these young guys do I want to talk? And there's one more. It is two more guys. Two more guys I want to talk about because I just didn't know what to do with them. And again, they feel like they should be in this conversation. And I just got stuck and I chickened out. And I just put them on the other side of the line because I got my 50. We'll recap it in a minute. Aaron Gordon in Denver. I love Aaron Gordon in Denver. I think the fit is great. I like the fact that... Has anyone been paying attention to the fact that Aaron Gordon is throwing no-look behind-the-back passes this season? Like, he the way he plays basketball, it seems that since he's been around Jokic, he's just embraced this, like, cut, move, unselfish, like, beautiful game thing. Now, the problem is he's not a great three-point shooter. He will take them, but he consistently makes them, like, in the low 30s. He doesn't have a great offensive game, but I love the fact that he uses his body to post up and seal, but that's pairing. You need a great entry passer like Jokic. And then defensively, we've talked about this archetype over and over and over again. I want him to be a better defender to go into that archetype, but I just don't think he has enough defensive bite to him on that end.
Yeah, then this is the type of player that's been miscast, so I would have loved to see him in this kind of role for his whole career so he can develop. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen over the next couple seasons. But defensively, I think that's a really interesting point because in my mind, he's the type of build where I'm like, this should be the kind of guy that's a wrecking ball on defense. But I think his strongest ability is kind of a man-to-man against some like bigger creators. Like if you're going to get someone like Kawhi or LeBron or Paul George or something like that, Aaron Gordon's the kind of guy you want to have. You can even throw him out on a point guard in stretches. But he's not necessarily the guy that you're going to be like, all right, I need you to protect the rim in bunches here and do an effective job of that. And I don't think that's ever going to be exactly the kind of player that we're going to see from him defensively. And yeah, I think his passing growth, I think I forgot who tweeted it. It might have even been Mike. Mike's getting a lot of call today. Made some kind of comment about Aaron Gordon's always been this good of a passer and that he's just kind of being unlocked now. So I didn't necessarily see it, but I think he's expanded as a passer this year.
This is a great segue into someone else who continues to expand as a passer and I think is expanding as a passer this season. But I just keep getting less comfortable with what I see from him defensively, and I keep getting less comfortable with the kind of role I think he would play on a better team, because in New Orleans it's all on ball, on ball, on ball, and everything kind of runs through him, and that's Brandon Ingram. And I had him in last year as a sub all-star, and again, maybe it's just trying to be strict on 50 or the fact that, you know, this hasn't been his best overall season or whatever. He's still a good offensive player, but I think the overall package for me with Ingram, I'm still not super comfortable with in this category. But, you know, obviously he's a big scorer. How do you feel about that?
He's just been on the cusp for years now. And I really don't know if I have anything to add beyond what's been said like over and over about him. I want to finally see him. I feel like he has all of the tools. Sometimes he'll have a drive where it's like, oh my God, look at this 6'11 guy that's just at the rim all of a sudden. He's laying it in. Why doesn't he do this every possession? And he has a nice little pull-up mid-game, and his jumper looks really smooth sometimes, and sometimes he flashes really good passes. And I don't know. It just never all comes together at once.
So recapping, technically 23 sub-All-Stars.
Can I interrupt you?
Before the recap?
Yeah. I think there's one more guy. One more guy.
Let me do okay. All right. Who's the other guy?
One more guy. Ben, how do you feel about Miles Bridges?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. How did we not talk about Miles Bridges? I've got 35 layers of notes on him.
Yeah. That's why I interrupted you. Miles Bridges.
Oh no. That's why you're here. So when I started, I was like, Miles Bridges, he's definitely in. He's definitely a sub all-star. Then I started going through more stuff and more research and more numbers and more games. And here's where I am with Miles. I could easily be talked into him being in. Easily. But I'm also concerned about his defense. I feel like his defense should be better than it is. I feel like when I see the idea of Miles Bridges, I'm like, this guy on a playoff team should be a valuable defensive weapon. And on the Charlotte Hornets right now, who are a borderline-ish playoff team, his defense is not great. Okay. He doesn't have tremendous awareness away from the ball. So you don't get this athleticism coming into the paint, all kinds of paint protection, shot blocking, things like that. You don't get as much of that as I would want. And then on the ball, especially on the perimeter, he's got some issues with his foot speed where he can be taken off the dribble. And I think the totality of that is like, you get an okay defender. He's not really a negative, in my opinion. But I also, when I look at the idea of Miles Bridges, I think more of his improvement this season, or all of his improvement this season, seems like it's on offense. Attacking off the closeout, straight line drives, that little spin move, finishing, those are all great. I'm not sure how I feel about that player. Like, I went back and forth with both the Bridges, Miles and McHale. I think I'm more comfortable with McHale. They almost play the exact same position on a playoff team. What do you think?
I think I'm more comfortable with McHale because I can see it. Like, I understand exactly what he's going to be doing, and I think I trust him more because I've seen it more in high-pressure situations. But I do think that Miles has developed into a better on-ball creator than McHale has. Like, I think it was, I don't know how many games ago it was, but I think it was a Cavs game. LaMelo was out with like five fouls with a few minutes to go in the fourth quarter, and Miles kind of took over. It was kind of like, all right, let's see what Miles is going to do in this clutch moment. He had this really nice, like, hanging layup pass with, like, I don't know, there's like 3 minutes left or something like that. He had a really other nice pass. He had a huge drive and, like, Dominique type of jam over Evan Mobley. And I'm like, this guy is ready for this. This is great. And I think defensively what's interesting is he has these really explosive moments that you watch and you're like, this guy's it on defense. Like, he had like a two-handed like pin on the backboard. He disrupted an alley-oop pass to Evan Mobley. And
that was
like,
the Celtics game that I was alluding to earlier. He, in transition, he tried to do the Ja Morant. He almost caught it with two hands off the backboard. So, yeah, that's what's so fascinating, right? It feels like he's a more enticing defender than the total package I've actually seen. But I think, to be fair, he's 23 and McHale's 25. And if you told me in a year or two, you're going to come back and do this podcast and you're going to feel better with Miles being ahead of McHale, either more comfortably as a sub all-star or, you know, Miles, maybe can Miles get all the way to being an all-star? That seems like a thing that's possible as well.
Yeah, I think that's possible. I don't know where I am, like 60-40 on this. I really just like what McHale does, and I think what McHale does, he does really, really well, whereas Miles is a bit more of a jack-of-all-trades.
Yeah. Did I forget anyone else?
I mean, I feel like I could just like list players.
Let's do the recap, assuming I didn't forget anyone. Well, I don't think I forgot anyone else on my own board. Miles was literally next to...
Maybe Tyrese Haliburton.
Okay. young player. Yeah, young player, exact same thing. I don't know what to do with any of the Kings. Like, I literally started watching Kings games, like binging them, just because I was like, wait a second, the Kings have all these guys, Fox, Haliburton, even Harrison Barnes, right? Old friend from the Warriors and then Dallas. And it's like, I'm not comfortable with the Kings having any top 50 players. Rashawn Holmes can be really good, right? I'm not comfortable with any of them being there. But they have all these guys that are tantalizing. I think the easiest one to see is Haliburton, because he's young and because he's developing, continuing to grow. I love his, like, Eddie Jones all around. Now he's hitting sidestep threes. He's always been a good passer going back to when he was in high school. I think there's a lot going on there. I considered him already, but I think I'm more comfortable, you know, coming back in a year and evaluating where he's at. So to recap the team, for big men, we had Evan Mobley, DeAndre Ayton, Jaren Jackson Jr., Domantas Sabonis, Jakob Poeltl, John Collins, Miles Turner, and then I think I said out on Vucevic, right?
Did you?
I can't remember. Someone's going to have to listen to the episode again. On the smalls, it's LaMelo Ball, Lonzo Ball, Darius Garland, Fred VanVleet, Mike Conley, Kyle Lowry, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, DeJounte Murray, Marcus Smart, and then I can't remember what we said about Alex Caruso. I think Alex Caruso I went in as well. And then the quote-unquote wings, Bradley Beal, Jaylen Brown, Andrew Wiggins, Anthony Edwards, Mikal Bridges. That's it. That should be 50 players, half of them roughly all-stars, half of them sub-all-stars. We made it, Cody.
That was great. And we kept it under 45 minutes.
We... If you want to support this show, head on over to patreon.com/thinkingbasketball. You can sign up there and get a ton of extras. It's a great way to directly support anything Thinking Basketball. If you've made it all the way through this slightly long 45-minute episode, this journey through, like, let's be honest, like half of the darn NBA, I really hope you enjoyed it. And I thank you, as always, for listening all the way to the end. And wherever you were listening, I hope you're having a great day.